We will discuss tonight the mitzvah of hafashas challah and various questions that arise in regards to it. The mitzvah of hafashas challah is mentioned in Parshas Shlach, where Hashem tells Moshe, "Daber bnei Yisrael v'matzah lehem b'vo'achem al ha'aretz asher ani mevi eschem shama v'yabach cholchem milechem ha'aretz tarimu truma la'adonai." Interesting to note, it's called Truma. Reishis arisa sechem chala tarimu truma ki trumas goren kein tarimu osa. That the chala, actually the word chala actually means a loaf. And therefore when it says here in the pasuk, it means a loaf, a piece of the dough. Chala tarimu truma, to take a loaf and to give it as a truma to the kohen. And the first question we have is, in a certain sense, if we already have the mitzvah of truma, from the wheat, the farmer already took truma, what's the point of taking yet another truma, in addition, taking another loaf now as truma, when we already took truma and gave it to the kohen? Seems that Torah is requiring us to take another truma beyond what was originally taken. The Sefer HaChinuch has a very, very nice explanation of this. The Sefer HaChinuch mentions two reasons why the Torah gave us the mitzvah of challah beyond the regular mitzvah of hafrashas truma for the kohen. The first idea that he mentions is that since bread is something which is the basic part of every meal, the farmer gets his crops every once a year, basically. And therefore the grain is processed once a year. So when the farmer processes his grain, he's mafish truma, and that's it. And of course we'll have a stockpile, but the involvement of the Israel, the mitzvah of giving to the Kohen, is basically once, maybe twice a year. Okay, with each crop. But basically it's very, very limited. Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted to give us the opportunity to have this mitzvah on a daily basis, and therefore that since a person's main staff of life is the bread, the Sefer HaChinuch writes, "Batzav makom lezakotenu b'mitzvat tmidit b'lachmenu." Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted us to have a constant mitzvah, kedei shetanuach bracha bo aydei ha-mitzvah. That through the mitzvah of hafrashas challah, we get a bracha in our dough, we get a bracha in our food, and Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted to give us the benefit of a bracha in our daily food, and therefore gave us the mitzvah of challah and bread, which is something which happens on a daily basis. The second idea that he mentions is that it's also for the benefit of the Kohanim that they should be able to get something which is very prepared. That as opposed to the grain which the Kohen has to stockpile, now the Kohen has to start going making bread, because Baruch Hu wanted to ensure that they would have a supply of ready-made food and their takeout food, and therefore because Baruch Hu gave mitzvah of challah, which is already after the dough, the wheat has been processed and it's been ground and it's made into flour and the dough has been made. And therefore we should give to the Kohen after everything has already been made. And this is the additional mitzvah of challah to be able to give us a chance for a daily mitzvah and to also provide the Kohanim something for which they won't have to do work now. It's already in its prepared state. Now, if we think about this mitzvah, we always ask the question, we typically think of challah as a mitzvah hatsluya ba'aretz. As a minute, we put it together with trumas and maestas and other issues that have to do with Eretz Yisrael. Although in a certain sense, if you think about it, it's not quite a mitzvah hatsluya ba'aretz, in the sense that it's not really an agricultural mitzvah. And that the mitzvah of challah is basically dependent on when you make the dough. Alright? It doesn't have to do with the growing, unlike truma maestas, which is immediately when you gather from the ground, or kilayim, or orla, those all have to do with the growing process. The mitzvah of challah is based on when you make the dough. And therefore it has interesting ramifications. What happens if you take wheat from chutzlars, you brought flour from chutzlars in Eretz Yisrael and you made dough here? Or you took flour from Eretz Yisrael and you took it to chutzlars? Okay, and the answer is that it has to do with the place where the dough was made. Because the time of the mitzvah is at the time of making the dough. And therefore, even if the flour is chutzlars flour, but it's made here, it's chayav in challah. And conversely, if you took flour from Eretz Yisrael and you made it, and you took it out to chutzlars and you made a dough in chutzlars, then it's not chayav in mitzvah of challah. But this, so it's really not so much dependent on agriculture, but nonetheless, it says in the source number 3, it mentioned that the mitzvah is still dependent on Eretz Yisrael, because as we saw in Pasuk Yutet, and we began with, Vayaba cholchem milechem haaretz. The Torah links the mitzvah. Says the mitzvah is ba'cholchem milechem haaretz. When you eat from the lechem of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore the Torah, even though it's not per se an agricultural mitzvah, but the Torah nonetheless said it only applies to lechem haaretz, and therefore whatever is considered lechem haaretz, i.e., that the dough was made here in Eretz Yisrael, that is chayav in the mitzvah of challah midoraisa. Yeah. Okay, so we'll get to that one. Okay, so we'll just get to that one second. Okay, we're based on the pasuk, and that's what we have in source 3. If you look, not only that, it also has to be at a time, even in Eretz Yisrael, the mitzvah on the doraisa level is when all of Eretz Yisrael, bezman shekol Yisrael sham, as it says bevoachem, when you, as a whole, as a community, as a nation, come to Israel, v'lo biyat nikkach. L'fichach, says the Shulchan Aruch, chala bizman hazeh, afil bimei ezer be'eretz Yisrael, in time of the Second Temple, when there was a Beit HaMikdash, but most of Am Yisrael was no longer there. Eina ela mi divrehem, is a mitzvah mi derabanan, because the mitzvah d'orais is only for a dough of Eretz Yisrael, when all of Am Yisrael is present in Eretz Yisrael. In Halacha Gimel, in Source 3, that's what you would ask, what about in Chutz Laretz? Mafrishim chala b'chutz laretz midivrei sofim. This is a mitzvah that Chachamim, even though Chumos Samaisos, Chachamim didn't extend to America or to England or to outside of Chutz Laretz, but the mitzvah of chala, Chachamim did apply, Chachamim did require to take chala in Chutz Laretz. Why? Kadesh lo tishachach torat chala miYisrael. For the people to remember this mitzvah of chala, because the Chachamim required it even in Chutz Laretz. Again, we have to understand why should it be different? Why don't we say the same thing about Shulmos and Maestas and everything else? And perhaps this goes back to what the Sefer HaChinuch had mentioned, that since this is the mitzvah which is on a day-to-day basis, for the Chachamim wanted us to continue feeling the day-to-day connection with the Hafrash of Chala, with this mitzvah in our day-to-day existence, to remember that the food is connected with spirituality, is connected with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, to give to the Kohen. Therefore, they extended the mitzvah also to Chutz Laretz. So there is a mitzvah to be mafresh challah also in Chutz Laretz, although as we see, there are a couple of differences, and there are a few leniencies that we have in challah Chutz Laretz as opposed to hafresh challah here in Eretz Yisrael. We're also aware that we find tremendous amounts of, and usually we associate mitzvah challah with women, and the truth is, technically speaking, it's not per se linked to women. The mitzvah of challah is a mitzvah whoever has a dough, and if you have a baker, so the baker has to be mafrish the dough. However, in the home setting, this mitzvah is usually designated for the women, and the Medrash mentions this idea. The Medrash in source number 4 explains why. Nehemah natan la mitzvat challah. Why do we find a special association with the challah for the women? In a certain sense, this is a chance to fill in the gap that occurred with Adam HaRishon. Because of the chait of the Eitz Hadas, this is Adam was considered Chalato Shel Olam. Interesting idea. What is the idea? Why is Adam called Chalato Shel Olam? In what sense is Adam the Chala of the world? What is Chala? So perhaps the idea that Chala is basically, so it's called Reshit Aristotechem, this is the beginning of the dough. This is supposed to be the beginning, the perfection in a certain sense of the dough, and Adam was the beginning and the perfection of the world, and that over that, because of the Chait of the Eitz Hadas, was lost, and therefore we try to rectify that by being Mafish Chala, and by once again giving the beginning, dedicating the beginning back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, in our day-to-day life, there were the special mitzvahs given to the women in a sense to help rectify what was done with the chait of the Eitz Hadas. This mitzvah is especially on Erev Shabbos, the Ma'ariv writes in source number 5, that there's a practice to make a dough on Erev Shabbos, to make and to be mafresh challah. It says, "Hu mikvot Shabbos v'yontif be'ein l'shanos." Part of the kvot Shabbos is to prepare a dough and to be mafresh challah from the preparation of us don't have enough to do on Erev Shabbos. This is one more thing to kvot Shabbos. Interesting discussion. The poskim, to what extent that applies, you can get the bakery. There is a special issue of having a special dough for Shabbos. If we make what we call challah, as opposed to having a regular bread, interesting discussion of the poskim, what if the bakery will make those same nice challahs, braided challahs, with, you know, shellac with eggs? Right? Is that enough? Or is there a special thing of doing it in the house itself as part of the kvod Shabbos, not just having the result of the nicer bread, but also the process of being mafish the challah? So those who are able to, those who have the time, it's certainly an opportunity to extra kvod Shabbos. If not, we can get the nice loaves from the baker. Okay, in any sense, this though is the background basically of the mitzvah of challah, which as we saw is essentially a kind of truma, and it has many of the laws of truma in the same sense it's the kohen, and as we see the kohen has to eat it b'tahara, it has to be nefu b'zman hazeh. The kohen is not able to eat the challah because he is tameh, and the challah itself becomes tameh. We saw that the And we saw the Sefer Chinuch explaining that the mitzvah is to have a chance to have the mitzvah on a day-to-day basis. And also maybe another reason why it's given over to the women, because they are after all the ones who are home and available on a day-to-day basis to make the dough, and therefore this mitzvah is given over to them, in addition to the idea mentioned by the Midrash. Okay, so this is in terms of the background of the mitzvah. The first basic question which comes up is what kinds of dough are chayav in hafrasha challah? Okay, dough or batter, right? Doesn't make a difference, right? When we talk about lechem, lechem is usually typified by two or three qualities. Number one, when we talk about bread, we usually talk about bread made out of chameshes minei dagon, or the five kinds of grain. Either way, usually wheat, sometimes barley, but basically the five are oat bread, okay? And therefore, basically, the mitzvah of hafrashas challah is for flour from a dough made out of a chamisha mini dagan. Typically, bread also involves a thick dough as opposed to a batter. And bread is typically baked. Right? So this is what we talk about. Think of the classical bread. The classic bread was a thick dough of wheat that was baked. Therefore, the question is, how many of these are essential? Which of these elements are essential? What happens if I have something which is either it's not wheat, or it's not a thick dough, or it's not baked? Is there still an element of challah, or do you need all of these various components for there to be a chiyav hafrashas challah? That's what we have over here in source number 6. Ein chayav b'chala ela b'chameshet minei tevuah. The mitzvah of challah is only for the five types of grain, which we talk about wheat, and barley, and oats is assumed to be, and spelt and rye, which ve'ein chayav ela chameshet rivaim. Okay, here the Gemara, the question is, we all know that you need to have a certain quantity, a fairly large quantity on the home level, of dough in order to have a chiyuv of hafrashas challah. Where do we get this from? Where do we get this size? What does it mean? Five chameshet rivaim, five quarters of what? Right. So chameshet rivaim is a unit called the kav, kuf, not kuf vav, not a line, but kuf bet. The unit called a kav in the times of the Mishnah, in the times of the Gemara, and the shear for challah was something which was five quarters of a kav and a quarter, basically. Okay, what is this based on? If you go back to the beginning, to the pasuk chaf, it talks about varishit arisotechem, the beginning of your dough. Because Moshe was talking to Bnei Yisrael in the Midbar. And therefore, Chazal derived that we're only chayav to be mafish challah from a dough which was the size of what the man that Bnei Yisrael had in the Midbar. And each person had in the Midbar, we said, well, had an omer of man. Each person had an omer of man. And how much was an omer? It says, v'ha omer asirit ha'ifahu. The omer was a tenth of the ifah, which is some other measurement. And the omer was a tenth of that. And therefore, that was the size, that's how much, that was the daily ration for people in the Midbar, an omer, an asirit ha'ifah, a tenth of the ifah. And that size dough is chayav in challah. And the calculation for that is that it comes out, basically a tenth of the ifah is this kav and a quarter, which is essentially what it boils down to, umidah shemasik mem gimel beitzim v'chomesh beitza, 43 and a fifth eggs. Okay, a volume equivalent to 43 and a fifth eggs. Interesting gematria, if you think about chala, the gematria is 43. Okay, so it's easy mnemonic to remember, but that's the shear. That the shear for chala is the size of the ration they had in the midbar, which was an omer, which was five quarter, a kav and a quarter, which is equivalent of 43 and a fifth eggs. Mimalim oto kemach, v'oto kemach hu shi'ur chala. Okay, so this is, if you notice, it really is a volume, not a weight. Okay, although it's much more convenient for us to deal with weight. Umamalim hamida kemach tia mechuka v'lo gdusha. It says when we fill up the measure with wheat, with the flour, it should be flat and not heaping, right? Because when you talk about a size of a container, so you can heap the container, or you can have it flat. So here we have 2 inches. So this is a, how much is that? Okay, so this is, of course, is a question of questions. How much flour do you need? So we're told here something will fill a container the size of 43 eggs. Now this, there are two facets that have to be calculated over here. First of all, how big is an egg? All right, that's the sometimes the post can have discussed, are our eggs the same? Can we rely on the eggs that we have nowadays? Have the size of the eggs changed? And that also is one of the issues that's a big machlokes amongst the poskim. And the second is, you talk about, since we don't really, it's hard for us to work with the volumes of 43 eggs, it's much easier to work with, you have a kilo of flour, it's much easier for us to work by weight, but how much do you pack it in? Yeah, because you're not really, if you're doing that in a container, you can take the flour, you can pack the flour in, or you can have it pour it in loosely, might a little bit more air in it. This is something Plus have discussed. And basically, there are two approaches to how much you need for challah. And this has to do as well with how big the size of the eggs are. What's typically said, the two shiurim that are given, basically the beginning, the cutoff point, is once you've hit 1,200 grams, or 12 or 1,250, the person should be mafish already without a bracha. Okay? Because that already is a point where that already may be the size of 43 eggs. And therefore, once you've hit 1,200 or 1,250 grams, a person, that means basically we get packs of a kilo. So basically, we're talking about a kilo, a pack and a quarter. Right, a dough made out of a pack and a quarter, what? A fifth, okay. Quarter, fifth, right. So, a quarter or a fifth, 12 or 12.50. So once you're talking in that range, then already you have to be mafish without a bracha. In order to make a bracha, though, because we're not sure that's enough, you need a larger amount. There are two different, significantly different shiurim. One is, it was given as 1660, okay, which is basically a bag and two-thirds. Okay, let's get 1 2/3, right? So, yeah. Okay, so let's say a pack and 2/3. If you take a pack of flour, which is a kilo, a pack and 2/3, they're ready according to one sheet to make a bracha. Whereas another opinion of the Chazanish, who assume that the eggs nowadays are much smaller and the old eggs were much bigger, that not until you hit 2250, which is basically 2 1/4 packs, do you make a bracha on it. Okay, that's a lot. That's a lot of dough. What? That's a big variation, correct. That's a very big variation, and that has to do with a whole different discussion that comes up on Pesach, and a whole discussion of whether the correlation of our shiurim to the shiurim in the Mishnah, as it's mentioned, this has to do with the question of whether the eggs, we can assume the eggs nowadays, are more or less the same size as the eggs that they were in the times of the Mishnah, or the eggs got much smaller. Basically, the Chazanish has a calculation that what we have is basically only half the size of what they had in the times of the Gemara, and that's why he has this tremendous range, that for 1,200 we already mafresh, but to make a bracha, to be sure, he basically almost doubles it and requires 2,250. Whereas many of the poskim, it's Sfardim for sure, you follow this shita, and many Ashkenazim, the practice in Yerushalayim, that already 1,660 to make mafresh with a bracha. Okay, in the other case, certainly by 12 you have to make a bracha, you have to be mafresh, but a bracha not until the 1,660 or 2,250. This is a very relevant question. So what do you do if you made 2 kilo flour? Make a bracha or not make a bracha? So this is an interesting question. I spoke with Rav Eichenberg this morning, who's one of the experts on this. He said it depends. It depends on basically to what extent who you're dealing with. the people who follow the Chazon Ish, which is sort of, he's very close to the Chazon Ish, so they instruct not to eat 2250. But the practice in Yerushalayim, I understand, is to follow the Chazon, a smaller number of 1660, and the Sfardim do also, so therefore there is a person who does that much, who makes 2 kilo, can make a bracha on that fresh. If you're almost close, you want a little bit more to be sure, that's fine. But if you've made 17, 18, 19, and 20, and you don't want to make any more, there is room, it's possible to make a bracha on that as well. That seems to be the more accepted practice. What? I'm sorry? The Chazon Ish requires 2250 to make a bracha. So if someone sort of wants to make, because one of the first questions I had here, when the woman had asked me years ago, I said, I want to be mafish challah and to make sure that, how much do I need to make sure you have that? So if you're interested in doing it to make sure that you're going to everybody, then you would need 2250. One wish you two more, but so let's leave it at that. But if a person ended up saying, look, two kilos, whatever, is more than enough for me, and I'm not going to make more than that, then if you can make a bracha on it, on 1660, you can already make a bracha. Okay. Fine. Now, so this is as far as the type of grain, and therefore it's an interesting question. Also, a person makes rice bread, okay, a person does not be mafish challah from a rice dough, only if it's a wheat dough, though there's interesting halacha, that if you mix together rice and wheat, that the wheat causes the rice to ferment in such a way that even if it's mostly wheat, mostly rice, but you have some wheat in, you would have a chiyuv challah, you have rice flour. Again, you need a lot of rice flour. I don't think anyone's going to make so much rice flour. But if you were to have a very large dough of rice flour with some wheat in it, then you would also be mafish challah. Okay, but typically speaking, that doesn't happen. It's mostly standard flour. Okay. So that's as far as the type, as far as the amount, and what about the various kinds? To what extent do you need to bake it and have a thick dough? So this is what it says over here in source number 7, is Shulchan Aruch writes, Isa Shabzata Raka, something which has a batter, okay, that's a cake, as opposed to a dough for challah. As opposed to a dough, a batter. If you have to mafish challah from a batter, you made a very large cake, or you made many cakes, okay, we'll see. Va'afa'a b'tanur o b'machvat. If it was baked in the oven or is fried on a frying pan without a lot of oil. If you, like the deep fry, we'll talk about shortly about sufganiyot, which are fried in the oil, has a different halacha. But if we're talking about something made on the frying pan or made on the griddle or made in, what do you call those pans, the stirpela, that's something that they bake or the tzfardim have baked this kind of dough in on the fire. So if it's done, even if it's done on the fire, but it's done in such a way that it's done dry, so then it says it's chayiv in challah, that's chayiv in challah. Okay? So therefore a batter which is baked is chayiv. If you were to make a very large batter and then bake it, it would be chayiv in challah, although interestingly here there's a point only after you bake it. Because we mentioned that the time for hafrasha, so the chiyuv for challah is when you make the dough. In Hebrew it's called gilgul haisa. When you knead the dough together, you finish kneading the dough, that's when you have the chiyuv, and that's the best time to be mafish challah. If a person forgot, you can be mafish after it's baked. But the ideal time to take the challah is when it's still after you've finished making the dough, that's the ideal time to take the challah. So that's when you have a thick dough. But a batter, a soft batter, a loose batter that we've spoken about now, that dafka should be taken after it's baked. Not to pour off a little of the batter, but first bake it, and then you'd be mafish challah. If you're talking about large quantities, which is more institutional, because in the house you very rarely have so much cake that you're going to have batter of 2 kilo of flour in your batter. Okay, you have to make a sheet. If you're talking about a sheet, a full sheet cake, you're making a simcha or something, but you may have that much cake. So then you would have bake it first, and then mafish challah. Whereas the dough, it's better to mafish from the dough itself. In halacha gimel, what about sufganiyot? Okay, you're making sufganiyot, and you've made yourself a thick dough, but you are not going to bake it. You're going to make some sort of knedlach, not from stuff which is already challah was taken already, but you're going to, from flour, you're going to make some sort of knedlach or something. But you make something that you're going to cook. Right? What is the din of something which was a dough which is going to be cooked or fried in deep oil as opposed to bacon. That's what here in Halacha Gimel, Surah 7, Isa Shablilata Ava, something which is a thick dough. V'gilgala al dat levashla o litagna. It was meant from the very beginning. It was not intended. I never had in mind to bake there. But once I made a dough, to a thick dough with the intention of baking, it's chayv and challah. But if from the very, very beginning I knew I was going to make these sufganiyot, I knew I was going to deep fry them, I knew I was going to put it in the soup, and I never had any intention at all to bake them. So then it says here, p'turah. The Shulchan Aruch paskins that this situation where it was intended to be baked, to be cooked or fried in deep oil, and it was in fact cooked or baked or fried in the deep oil, it's part of the Isno Chiyah for Pashas Challah, and therefore sufganiyot, according to the Shulchan Aruch, are not chayav in challah. There's no need to say, even if you were to make a whole batch, you made a whole tremendous dough, you're making the Hanukkah party for the whole neighborhood, and therefore you started making a tremendous dough, and you're sitting there for 5 hours, dipping batter of sufganiyah after sufganiyah into the oil. There's no need to be mafresh challah. However, not everybody agrees. If you just look for a second on the top in source number 8, the Shach mentions that a lot of poskim argue, and therefore the conclusion of the Shach towards the end, yesh lahachan, source number 8, yesh lahachmir lahafish chala below bracha. The Shach says, since many argue on this psak, that since it was made a thick dough, it wasn't a batter but a thick dough, there are those who say that itself is enough of a reason to be chayav in challah, and therefore he recommends in the sufganiyot, persons should be mafish challah from the dough, but of course without a bracha, because not everyone agrees, the Shulchan Aruch in fact is no obligation of challah, and therefore you only make a bracha. The rule is that safik bracha is lahakel, you only make a bracha when you're sure. And therefore, since there's a question here whether or not you have to be mafrish, so therefore we will make the consensus of the poskim is to take challah, if you have a large quantity, but not to make a bracha. So this is as far as sufganiyot to other things that are going to be cooked. Okay, finally, again, going back to the bottom here, in hay, if you make, it talks about something called trisa. What is trisa? Explain, Isa Shablilata Raka, it's a soft batter, Vishofkino Talakira, and you spread it out on the stove, Umit Pashet, Alev and Afet, and it gets baked against Tura. That's what we call pancakes. Okay, so it says here that if you make it large, you're making pancakes, again, you're having a big party, and you're making a large pancake, and you have a loose batter, even though it is ultimately baked. Okay, we saw that if you take this and put it into an oven and make a cake out of it, you would have to be mafish challah. But since you're not making a thick cake, but just going to make a flat pancake, so that also, that's not like lechem. The whole chiyuv is when vayaba chochem mi lechem haaretz. It has to be considered, it has to be something like bread. And a pancake, which is thin, flat, even though it's, in a sense, it's fried, it's baked on the stovetop, but since it's so flat, it doesn't look like, it's not like bread at all, and therefore for pancakes, even if you're to make a large quantity, there is no obligation. I remember when you were in camp Rasha, they used to sit there, they used to make pancake after pancake after pancake after pancake after pancake after pancake. You're talking about a lot of pancakes there, and you have enough dough there, many more than 2 kilo of batter. And even if you could stack up, 100 pancakes, doesn't make a difference because that's not considered like bread. If you were to take a batter and you make a big cake, then after it's baked, then it's already hardened into a thick cake, then you have to be mafish from a soft batter. But a soft batter, which you just rolled out flat, which is not like bread, that is no obligation of challah.
I have a question. I don't know if this is the end of Gimel, but if you made a dough that you were intending to use from your...
Uh-huh.
And then halfway in the middle, you got sick of making
the sufganiyot,
and you said, you know, I'm
going to
take the rest of
the sufganiyot. Okay, so that's the end of Gimel, fine. Okay, so that's, all right, Gilgal, okay, in the middle of Gimel. Gilgal, that's the very end of Gimel. Gilgal, that's sufganiyot, v'chayotzei bahen, v'nimlachas etam lechem, chayetet. Yes, so if you ended up making it into, if you ended up baking it, then you would have to be mafish challah.
At that point, you
Right. At that point, then you'd be mafresh challah from the dough that you're making now. Okay, and the same thing is also true, hafuk, if you had a dough that you were planning to make in tachal and then you decided to make sufganiyot, since you didn't have to, you were thinking when you made the dough to bake it, it also would be a chayvin chalas. Only the ptur, meikar hadin, and therefore for us, ramifications, we should be mafresh, without a bracha, is only if you, from the very, very, very beginning, you intended to cook it and you ended up cooking it. But either from the beginning you didn't intend, you intended to bake it, or you ended up baking it, then you would have to be mafish with a bracha. But if you intended to cook it and you ended up cooking it, according to the Shulchan Aruch, your pater, and according to the Shach, and that's the recommendation of the Maisa, you should be mafish without a bracha. Again, assuming you have the proper quantity. Okay, so this is in terms of what type of dough. Basically, we mentioned it has to be, again, chameshet minim, it has to be of the five species, and it has to have a shear of either at least 1,200 grams, and for bracha, at least 1,660, and it should be something which is ultimately either a thick dough or baked. Okay?
It doesn't matter, I'm sorry. It doesn't matter if there's a lot of stuff in it, you know, sometimes
that
also... I know when you make a bracha, I'm
doing it first. Right, so we're talking here about... Mm-hmm. So we're talking about the amount of flour, right? The fact that you toss in all kinds of other stuff, I don't think the full effect... I don't think affects this issue. You have to have that amount of flour. You have to have at least the 1,200 grams of flour in the head. The fact that you've also dumped in eggs and you've dumped in oil and you've dumped in cocoa and you've dumped in sugar and all that stuff, that doesn't affect the din of challah.
So like yeast cake,
you don't
think yeast cake and stuff?
Okay. If a yeast cake, which is a thick dough, which is baked, you certainly would have to be mafish challah. Again, assuming you have enough flour. What?
Like a babka.
Right. But again, you're talking about a lot. From a kilo and a half, from a kilo and a half of flour, you get about 6-8 challahs. No?
Yeah.
I think from a kilo, about a kilo, what? What?
2.5 kilos
per challah. Yeah.
Definitely, I make 8 challahs.
Right. 2.5 kilos, and you get 8 challahs.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So if you're talking about so half of that, which is it's the minimum you need for that a bracha, so you're talking about at least 4 challahs, about 4 cakes. So again, but if you make a yeast cake, then that's a yeast cake that's 5 challahs. Yeah. Okay, again, so hamantashim, right, it doesn't have to be it doesn't have to be hamoti. Mizonos also, right, yes, mizonos is also chayav in hafashat challah. Yes. So if you're making hamantashim and you're making a lot of, again, if you're making a lot of dough for hamantashim, then yes, that also would be chayav in hafashat challah. Yes. Okay, and that's again, that's a thick dough which is being baked. Okay, so even though you're adding other things, it's not going to be hamotzi, it's going to be mizonos. But basically, the dough is essentially, this is bread dough which is thick and being baked. And therefore, it is chayiv in hafashas challah. Okay. Now, the next issue which comes up, which is sort of, to a certain extent, related to what you said, and that is, this is fine if you're making one dough. You have a dough, and you made the dough. What about a dough which is not meant just for one batch of challah? You're either going to make a dough and then you put some away for the next week, or you haven't gone. The teacher, the gananet, is going to make a dough and then give it out to all the kids. Okay? Or the reverse. Let's say, for example, you made your own dough or baked a cake and then you got cakes from all your neighbors and now you have a whole bunch of cakes together. Is there a possibility of either separate, what are the ramifications if the dough is separated or if the dough is joined together? How does that play out in terms of the din of challah? So this is what's discussed here in Sima Shin Chaf Hei. He talks about there are two ways of joining together. The person made two doughs. For example, you made the hamantashen. You made two batches of hamantashen. Okay, so let's say you made one batch with a kilo and then you made another batch with a kilo. Right, so now you have 2 kilo, basically, of hamantashen. Okay, but they were made in two separate batches. Do these two batches that were made separately, do they join together, these two doughs of challah that were made, do they join together to be chayav in challah? I said, no, each one is separate dough, and therefore each dough is less than the shiur, and therefore there is no chiyuv of challah. So the Shulchan Aruch mentions over here in source number 9, two ways by which the dough can join together. Right? One way is where he says, we have two dough, shtei yisot, she'em b'shumachat kishiur. Neither one has a proper amount. Im nog'ot zo b'zo, if they touch each other, ad she'nidbakim ma'ad zo b'zo. And the dough is sticky. And if the doughs end up touching each other, okay, though the dough expands and they bump into each other and they sort of stick together, right? So then that will connect, that will join the two doughs together, and they will be the mitzaref to have the shear together. So that's if you put on the counter, you made one dough of a kilo, you put it down on the counter, and then you put another dough of a kilo in another container, and then you put it down on the counter, and as it expands, the two doughs touch and start to stick to each other. Now that you have fasach hakol 2 kilos, you would certainly have to be mafresh. Okay, so that's one possibility of joining them together by having the two doughs stick to each other. The other possibility, it talks about where it's put together in a container. If, let's say, for example, you didn't make the dough, you didn't make the hamantashen, you did one batch of hamantashen, and you bake them, and you finish. Then you got to work on another batch of hamantashen, and you made another kilo of hamantashen, and you baked them. Then you took all the hamantashen and dumped them all into one big bag, okay? And now you have a bag which has in it, kanayinahara, a lot of hamantashen. Right? So that would join together, even though it's been baked, so that would join together into a shear of challah, and you'd have to be mafresh at this point. Now that you have the bag with all the hamantashen together, you would have to be mafresh challah. This comes up all the time in the matzah factories. But sometimes the matzah factories, they try to avoid having, they want to do it quickly, so don't put in that, they would try to do small batches one, a little bit at a time, but they want to have challah at the end. So when they finish, and they also don't want to take time while it's going to be mafresh challah, they just make all, they just let the run go, and they make all the matzahs, and then they take the matzahs, and they put them in a big sheet. Right? They put the boxes of matzah in a sheet, and they wrap it all up, and they cover it with a sheet, and then they wrap it all around in a sheet, and then they mafresh challah on the whole batch of matzahs. That's called seruf sal metarfam. They're all put together in a basket. So if a person has even to be made small batches, but the batches were then piled, were all put together into a container, that also joins them together, and now that you have a large quantity, it would be chayav in challah. Right? This, however, there's a very, very important ramification, a very, very important limitation on that. That is, that's only true if there's basically the same kind, or the kind of dough, or the kind of cake, whatever baked item you're making, that you would have no problem being together. For example, you made 5 cakes, okay, you're going somewhere, you made a sponge cake, and a chocolate cake, and an apple cake, and a carrot cake, and a who knows what cake, okay, you made a babka, and you put it together. So there, even though you've put them all into one big bag, and you have now a lot of cakes, but since you want each cake separate, you don't want the cakes being mushed together, okay, you just want to try to keep each cake separately, so then it wouldn't join together. But if it's the same kind of cake, or cakes where even though they might be slightly different, you don't care about the game mushed together, then they would join. Well, if you've made a platter, you're not going to have enough there.
Right.
Now, we're talking about a situation where you had two small quantities, and the two quantities were put together, so we have either, if it's in a dough form, the dough touches, okay, even if it's just out on the counter, and it's not in any container, but the two doughs touch, and the two doughs stick to each other, that joins them into one dough, or you had a big container in which all the doughs, or even the baked goods, are put together into the container, then also they would join together. There's an interesting question the person discussed, what about the fridge? Or the freezer, okay? You bake a whole bunch of cakes, and you put in the freezer, put another one 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 in the freezer, and boom! Suddenly you have a whole bunch of, what?
No, but you're putting them in like wrapped separately.
Okay, so there are a few reasons where it's lemaisa. We assume it's usually not chayv and challah for a number of reasons. Number one, usually it's different kinds of cakes. Okay, where you don't want them to be mentioned. And so the din of tseruf is only if you don't care about them getting mixed together. Unless you're putting in, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of the same, and especially cakes usually have less flour per. Right? So unless you have a tremendous amount of the same kind of cake, they wouldn't join together. Also, they're in separate containers. And that's a bit of a question. Some say that it's so different opinions on that. That if they're in a container in something, and others say that also something which is affixed, something which is sort of steady in its place. In fact, we're talking about a container which is movable, not something fixed together. So therefore, there is some discussion about it, but in most situations, you're usually not going to have putting this in the freezer. The fridge usually won't join it together in the most cases. Although there are some cases where it can, if you're making very much of the same and sort of loose, then it would be in principle, it might be possible to have them all joined together. What? Okay. Right, if a layer cake and you have cake and you have cream and another layer of cake on the top, right? And you can even have two different kinds. So again, the fact that you don't mind them being together, I don't think too much of them being together, but the fact that they are, I'm not sure. That's okay. What? No, but then they're not in a container. Now, again, if it would be in a pan, that would be true. But if they're just lying on a sheet, if they're just two layers lying on a sheet, again, no, because let's say, for example, I made one bread, right, and then for a kilo, and then I made another bread of a kilo, and I put it on top of it. Okay, once it's baked, that won't join together because the dough didn't stick and it's not in a container. It has to be in a container. Okay, so that's what I'm saying. So even though the fact that they were one on top of each other, doesn't mean even though they're on top of each other and touching each other, does not automatically mean that they're going to join. So they have to be in a container. So if they were in a pan which has sides, then it would. But if it's just on a flat board, then even if you didn't have the cream in between, you just made a layer and then you just started piling up. Right? You made chocolate cake after chocolate cake after chocolate cake after chocolate cake after chocolate cake and you start piling up your chocolate cakes. It's smushed on the bottom, but right? But if you start piling up your chocolate cakes, if they're already baked and they're not gonna stick together, those won't stick together anymore, and it's not in a container, you need one of the two. Either the doughs actually cling to each other, okay, or that they are in a container that will join them together for the shear of challah. But in the absence of that, then they will not join and you'll have to have a shear challah in each individual batch.
What about the baking? Let's say one week you make two sponge cakes,
mm-hmm.
shear.
Right.
And you stick it in your freezer. And then the next week,
But again, if you were, let's say for example, okay, if you were to put them all into a container, then yes, they would join together now, even though they're made a week apart, even though they're made a week after week, they will still join together for the shear of challah if you get to the same quantity. They said, you may not hear because each one still, generally, it's usually wrapped in its own container. Each one is in its own tin, usually also wrapped in a bag. Okay, and the question about the refrigerator, because usually it's pretty much in its place. So the question about the, on the technical level, lemaisa, you probably would not have to. Okay, because each one is usually kept separately, and each one is, and you were talking about something in a fridge. You were talking about a fridge, which is something which is affixed. But according to those who argue on these points, okay, or if you have a situation that you had, let's say, one big bag, and you just start putting all the things into that one bag, then it would become, once you've hit the point that you now have the equivalent of a kilo and a quarter of flour, then you would at this point it would be chayav and challah now. What about the other end, the flip side? What about a situation where, say, so the gananet made a large dough and then gives each child, you know, to make their own challah, to make their own challah roll? Does the gananet have to be mafish challah in such a situation? This is the flip side. We're not talking about joining together, but we're talking about a dough which is meant to be divided amongst a few people. Okay, we had a few neighbors that got together and they wanted to make a joint dough, and then each one's going to go home and take their and bake their own challah. Okay, so what about? So that's what we have here in source number 10, where it talks about a difference between a baker and other people. The baker, he expects to, in the bakery, he expects that he makes a dough and he expects people to take home. But if he knows that if he's not going to get people to buy the dough, he'll end up just all baking the dough and he'll use it for himself or some other way. So a baker is a separate situation. But he says other people who make an yisrael chalek b'batzek ptura. Even if the dough is large, but it's meant to be divided, then it's not chayav in challah. And therefore, if the dough is not meant, if the ganet is making a large dough, and it's going to each child is going to make their own little challah, and will either take it home, or even if they bake in the gan, but each child already has their own dough, then they would not be chayav in hafashas challah. If, however, they were to all bake it together, and after it's baked, then they would first start dividing it, then it would be chayav in challah. But if it's being divided before the baking, it's being divided, the dough itself is being divided, then there was no need to be mafash challah. Right, so if she has enough to keep for herself, then it is chayav and challah. She should be mafresh with intention for everyone. But if she's not going to keep enough for herself and all she has is just for the children, then she would not have to be mafresh challah. Okay, fine. This is where we're talking about different people. But let's say, for example, okay, so again, a person made a lot of dough, and she's going to bake two challahs this week, and she'll save some of the dough. She'll take the dough, and she'll make, she decides she doesn't like taking all the machines, right? Or she wants to mafish with a bracha. So she'll make, you know, 3 kilo of flour now, and after she makes the one big dough, and she takes her big Kenwood mixer, and she's going to use the machine. Okay, and after she makes the big dough, then she's going to chop it into 6 parts, and she'll have this one for this week, and she'll bake two challahs this week, and she has another part she'll freezer for next week, and each week she'll take out. That would be chayav, because it's not really being divided. I mean, it's been on separate weeks, but l'maisa, it's the same person, and it's all for herself, for her family. That would be chayav in a pashas challah. That's not considered. We're talking about dividing. We're talking about dividing amongst different people, not just being divided for a few separate weeks. On the other hand, if, let's say, for example, she's going to make one base dough, so she wants to make a few cakes. She wants rogalach, but she wants chocolate rogalach, and cinnamon rogalach, and this kind of rogalach, and cherry rogalach, and strawberry rogalach. Right? So if she wants, if she's making one dough, but she intends to divide it into different kinds of cakes where she is concerned that the cakes shouldn't get mixed together, she wants specifically chocolate. The chocolate should remain chocolate, the cinnamon should be cinnamon, and the jelly should be jelly. That also would be another example of where you can have something which is meant to be divided. So even though the base dough is one large base dough, but since it's intended to be divided into different cakes, that would be considered lechalek, and that would not be chayav in hafashas challah because it's meant to be divided. Okay? Right. And the last major issue, and that is the question of lemaisa, how does one go about being mafish challah? Okay, and, you've all done this, there are a few points though that are worth mentioning. Interesting, there's a bit of a question about the nusach habracha. Okay, what bracha do you make? What do you say? Okay, fish kalamanes. Okay, because there are a few different versions of the bracha. That's, I think, what's printed in most of the siddurim nowadays. Into the Rambam, right? Source 11. Kolam our fish kalam ve'etchla shek the shem satav v'sivan la fish kala. Period. Okay, that's That's the Nusach of the Rambam. Some say to that fish truma. Okay, because in a certain sense, if you think about it, the word challah itself, just mentioned, just means a loaf. Yeah, you're taking a loaf, you're declaring it to be challah, which is sort of the halachic term for what's being taken. The challah, we use the word challah to talk about this special kind of truma. So some have the version of challah, some have the version of truma, and some, as you say, this seems to be the what's printed in most sidurim, la fish challah min ha'isa. Right, so that's the issue as far as the bracha. The next question is, what do you say then? After you make the bracha, and then you take some of the challah. Okay, so actually there are two ways of doing it, and either way is acceptable. What do you take first bracha first? What do you?
Depends on the day.
Okay. Because basically, there are two ways of doing it. When I went to visit a baker with a mashkiach, and I go there, and I say, well, see him be mafresh challah. He makes the bracha, takes a little bit of dough, and that's it, puts it down. I'm saying, well, that's it. Because I'm used to saying that to say harei zol challah, you should say this, you know, to declare that this is challah. Apparently, there's a big machlokas whether it's necessary or not, the Shulchan Aruch says it's not necessary. There are two ways of being mafresh challah in practice. Either you make the bracha, and after you make the bracha, you just take a little piece. That's it. And in a certain sense, the fact that you said the bracha, that is the declaration that this is being made into challah. This is being designated as challah. The bracha itself, you said it. And then I take it. So it's very clear that what I did was being declared as challah, because that's what I did. And that's what the mashgiach does. Just makes the bracha and then takes it. The poskim, Ashkenazi poskim, recommend after this to say, when you take it, harei zol challah. That's recommended, but not essential. That's based on the Raiva here in Source 11. He talks about to say harei zol challah. He says afterwards you should kore l'shem v'omer harei zol truma. You should then say that this not just a bracha, but to say specifically this is challah. Sfadim don't do it. Ashkenazim recommend this, do so, but not critical. The other possibility is to take the dough off first, okay, without the intention that you're not making challah yet, you're just sort of getting it ready, then to make the bracha. But now, since you're not following up with any action, then it's more critical to say after you then to make the bracha, and then to say harei zol, part that I set aside, harei zol challah, there it's more necessary to say, because you're not following your statement with an action, you're not going and after the bracha taking it, so it's not clear what you're doing, unless you specifically designate that as the challah. If you do take it off beforehand, and you're putting it in a bowl, it's preferable to move the bowl next to the dough, because challah is supposed to take what we call min hamukah, supposed to be what's nearby. So if it's out on the open, it's not in a container, just on the counter, you have the piece that you took off, and the rest of the dough, that's fine. But if you put it into a container already, so you should move the container to be touching the dough. How much do you take? This is what it says here. There really is no shear. You can take any little amount. In source 13, the Rama writes that the practice is to take a small amount. No, he says, no, give me tol kezayis. It's custom, typical, it's typically take about a kezayis, which is a small amount. A kezayis is about the size of a matchbox. Okay, some people take a lot, there's no need to take a lot. The size of a matchbox is fine. And or even possibly less. The big question here is what to do afterwards. What do you do with the challah? The Ramah here talks about burning it. The ideal thing to do with the challah is to burn it. However, in our days it's a little bit harder to burn it, because it's a very interesting point, and that is essentially, since the Israel is not allowed, this is truma, and the Israel is not allowed to eat truma, basically for a Israel, even for a Kohen nowadays, who's Tameh, the challah, after you declare it as challah, is essentially forbidden food. And therefore, if you were to take this challah and bake it in your oven, you're going to trace your oven, because you have in it some that you are not allowed to eat. So if you take a pan and you put the challah in your pan and you burn it in a pot of yours, or you burn it into a pan of yours, you're essentially getting you're cooking in your pan some that you are not allowed to eat. And therefore, nowadays, in the old days, they just had a fire. They had a pile of wood, and they tossed the dough in the fire, and they'd burn it. That was the best thing. Nowadays, though, we don't have piles of wood to make fire. If the kids want to do it, they can have fun. But if parental supervision will allow kids to have to make wood fires, right? It's not like Ba'omer. So then, in the oven, it's a little bit hard. So there are three possibilities. Some say you can just put it on top of the circle with the what do you call it? The burner, right? On the burner. I just put it on the burner because that gets burned right away, and the pots don't go right on that. Some say you can want to put it in the oven to burn it. Just you can put it on the sort of, don't put it into onto the rack, okay? But put it, say, sort of on the bottom where the pots don't go. And you should also wrap it up in aluminum foil. Put preferably two layers of aluminum foil, and put it in the oven. It will take longer to burn, but you don't want it directly in contact. Preferably not have it directly in contact with the oven. Or, and this I think what most people do, it's just to double wrap it and to put it into the garbage. And that way it's not to show cover to it, to put it, to double wrap it before putting it away. All right. Finally, the last thing is in 14, what happens if something happens, you set aside the challah, and someone, one of your little kids, found a little piece of challah sitting on the counter, tossed it back into the dough, now what? Okay. What? What? Or if they, well, if they ate it, then there's nothing more to do. Okay. What if right? Or what happens if you forgot? What happens if you forgot to be mafresh challah, and now it's Shabbos? On Shabbos, you're not allowed to be mafresh challah. Okay. So that's an important point also to mention, that on Shabbos itself, you're not allowed to be mafresh challah, and therefore, if you forgot to be mafresh challah before Shabbos, you basically have to go get from your neighbor. Okay, if you remember Ben Ashmoshes, then it's still possible. If you have no other food, what? If you have no other food, then Ben Ashmoshes, it's still possible to be mafresh, challah. But basically, once Shabbos begins, you can't be mafresh. The only thing which is relevant, which is sometimes you do want to be mafresh, so you're going somewhere for Shabbos and you can't, and you're not sure if the person, you're not sure if the person is reliable about mafreshes challah. So then there is a possibility, or let's say, for example, you made challah, and for whatever reason, you don't want to, you forgot to take it from the dough, and you already baked it, and now you don't want to cut off a piece before Shabbos, you're not going to have lacha mishnah. So there is a possibility of sort of saying, if you know about this, then sometimes you can say, on Erev Shabbos, what I will take tomorrow will be challah, and then it's possible to mafresh on Shabbos if you sort of set it ahead and, on Friday. And these are details which are more when they come up. If the challah should get mixed in, again, basically consult your local rabbi, because basically it depends how much it is. It requires 101. What can be done is that since challah is a kind of being makdish, it's being dedicated to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there is a possibility of doing hataras nedarim. So that's why, well, for example, if your person was made mafresh challah and then it was put back in, so again, so you're adding usher food into the dough that you want to bake. Because we said that the challah, that once you, after you take the challah, it's usher for you to eat it. And therefore, if it goes back in, the whole food can become usher. So what can be done, though, is to hataras nedarim and to undo the hafrasha and sort of take it back to step to zero, and then to be mafresh over again. Again, these are things that a person has to know, that if the challah went back in, there is a problem, and to consult exactly what to do there. Sometimes there is a way of doing something, depending on how much, it may be batel, but if not, there may be a possibility of doing hataras nedarim. Okay. All right, I think we pretty much covered the... you need three people, right? You need three people, right? And this has come up. It's not this isn't just theory, right? There are situations that people make challah and someone didn't realize and put it back in, and then what do you do now? So there's a possibility of doing hataras nedarim. Okay. One final thing which I should be mentioning, and this is a big difference between the Chutz La'aretz and Eretz Yisrael. In Chutz La'aretz, you're allowed to eat before Bima Afishchala. That the person can eat, and then at any point, Bima Afishchala, as long as there's something left. You can't take the last crumb of Bima Afishchala, you have to have something still left. But you can eat half the cake. Let's say, for example, let's say before Shabbos, in Chutz La'aretz, the person made challah and forgot Bima Afish, so there's no problem. You can use it on Shabbos, just leave over a piece. And after Shabbos, you can be mafish. In Eretz Yisrael, though, you're not allowed to eat, basically, especially tevel, you're not allowed to eat from it until you're mafish challah. So therefore, if a person, as you said, ideally it should be done when it's still a dough, but if a person forgot to be mafish when it's a dough, and already baked it, you can still be mafish from it when it's, after it's been baked, but you're not allowed to eat until you're mafish the challah.
And cake
is the same thing. Because if you say cake, which is the soft batter, you can't be mafish from the batter. So therefore, after you bake it again, it's the same thing. So you make the bracha and take off a piece, or take off a piece into the bracha, and then harezo challah. Yes. Okay. There again, you can either bake it or the same thing. Since there's a burner, put into the double bag and put into the garbage. Yeah. Okay. Amen.